Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today, we'll discuss the article by Virginia Miller titled, In Pursuit of Scientific Excellence, Sex Matters. This article published online February 10th, 2012. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief William Stanley, author Virginia Miller, and leading expert Jane Reckelhoff. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Well, sex matters in physiology. Sex is a major determinant of the function of cells, even at the molecular level, certainly whole organs and the whole animal. But surprisingly, despite this being well established, sex is not reported in most scientific publications. A recent survey found that only 40% of whole animal studies reported the sex and 25% of cell-based work. So it's a problem. And Virginia, what is the American Physiological Society going to do about this?
Well, to their credit, the American Physiological Society is leading the way, and it's going to change their editorial policy that requires the authors to identify the sex of the experimental material that they use in the experiment. When I say this, it sounds like, oh, don't we already do that? And it's surprising that we don't require it. It used to be when I was in graduate school that, you know, you had to put in your methods enough details so someone else could repeat your experiment. And sex of the animal or the material is clearly information that needs to be there if somebody's going to repeat your experiment.
Thanks. Jane, how does this particularly impact cardiovascular physiology?
Well, there are lots of ways that it impacts cardiovascular physiology. For example, the studies that were done originally looking at the effects of aspirin in heart attacks in men showed that aspirin protected. And so women were treated the same as men were with aspirin for heart attacks. We now know in studies going back and looking at it that in fact aspirin doesn't protect women from heart attacks or myocardial infarctions. It protects them from stroke. Aspirin doesn't do so well in strokes in men. So the sex and gender differences are tremendous in cardiovascular disease, and we're just beginning to scratch the surface on what those differences are.
Thanks, Jane. In the 1980s, when I was a grad student, we had it kind of ingrained into us that cardiovascular disease was primarily a problem in men, and that's why we studied male rats and male volunteers. And that is clearly not true, especially as people live longer and we get more data. We know that women more than catch up after menopause. So, Virginia, how do we deal with that long historical bias towards studying males?
I think we have to push the scientific community to explore females. I think we're at a point in science and personalized medicine where it's no longer ethically acceptable to ignore half the population. And in order to embrace that and to increase the rate at which basic science is translated to human medicine, we have to account for sex as an important biological variable. And I think it goes beyond cardiovascular disease. It goes to respiratory diseases, to central nervous system diseases, to skeletal muscle, GI, renal, the whole gambit of what physiology is.
That's true, because there are a lot of studies now that are showing gender differences or sex differences in the brain that we didn't know anything about. And so in a lot of cases, impact the way that the rest of the body functions in response to the brain function.
And we now know that what goes on in the brain may impact immunological function or cancers. The ability to expand the effects of sex and gender differences to all of physiology is just astounding, and it really represents wonderful places for new young investigators to develop their own niche and really make a difference in terms of how translational physiology, translational science is conducted.
One thing I've encountered as a scientist, an editor, and a grant reviewer is that, you know, people will make a new mouse and they're not getting very many pups, and they're using them very sparingly, and they just lump the males and females together and write their grant or publish their paper, and they just make the statement that, well, we're not studying sex differences, so therefore we don't worry about it. How do we combat that kind of ignorance? Because, you know, it's a natural thing when you only have three or four or five animals per group, just to throw them together and look at the big picture differences of some protein, when really there are huge gender differences that you don't see because you didn't look for them. You didn't power the experiments appropriately.
What I just recently taught a class and was focused on sex differences, and I presented this concept to the class, and these, you know, senior fellows and whatever said, well, why? There's no rationale for lumping them together. I think there's significant scientific questions that need to be addressed. How do you know that there's equal viability of the cells from the male and female pups once they're in the dish? Is there evidence to show that the viability is the same? Is there evidence to show that the rate of apoptosis or proliferation is the same? Is there evidence to show that the pathways express the same in the culture media? I think these are basic the basic questions that have to be addressed before we adopt this technique as being acceptable.
Jane, your thoughts on that?
I agree. It's not only just in animal studies, though. In a lot of human studies, while the NIH requires that men and women be included in, and minorities be included in human studies, a lot of times the studies are not powered to separate sex and gender differences. And that is a huge problem. Because as Virginia said, we have no idea what the differences are, but it's likely that they are there.
Virginia, how does this impact people at the bench when they design a study, when they need to select the sex of the animal to be studied, or if they're doing cell culture work? How does this impact them?
I think we have to start backwards, Bill. What the American Physiology Society has done is to establish an editorial policy that requires the investigator report the sex of the animal. I think then it's up to the scientific community to provide feedback whether the outcomes, the design, and the experimental tools used to test the particular hypothesis has been appropriate for the question that's been asked based on the report of the sex of the animal. So I think it's going to take a long time for it to reach down to how an individual designs the experiment. But the burden right now is on the reviewers, it's on the associate editors and editorial staff to assure that this editorial policy is complied with. And I think even with NIH, with the reporting of women in clinical trials, and even though there's policies, the problem is in compliance and assurance that the policy is met. So I hate to say it, right now the burden's on you, Bill.
Yeah, well, I welcome the burden. Jane, what are your thoughts on this?
I agree with Virginia. I think that it's going to take re-educating the scientists. And I think that it's going to become more and more easy to do that, though, as these sex and gender differences start showing up in the literature. I think right now, most people, like you mentioned, when they're writing grants, they look at the bottom line financially. And trying to include males and females doubles the cost of a specific experiment. And then if you do find a sex and gender difference, you may want to go back to the experiment and add in the effect of the gonads. And now you're quadrupling the cost because you have to add in other groups. But I think that the more information we find where there are sex and gender differences, the more exciting scientists are going to become about looking at it.
You know, we always want to talk about new therapeutics or new approaches. And we have typically selected the animal that's most affected to study the disease process and to develop new target drugs. I think the idea that we need to study both the most affected and the most protected material or sex or gender is going to provide a lot of new information that has been typically ignored in the past. If the journals require it, the scientists are going to do it. So we have to start somewhere, and I am excited that APS is leading the way here, because really when we talk about searching for new ideas is really a pursuit of scientific excellence. To exclude an important biological variable like sex is not equivalent to scientific excellence. So we have to pay attention to it in order to achieve what we all want, which is excellence.
This new policy will be implemented, and I think it's going to improve the quality and uniqueness of our journals, because we will make it very clear what sex was used in all animal studies, gender and sex in human studies, and will, I think, make us even better. Virginia, Jane, thank you very much for a very stimulating conversation, and we look forward to implementing this new policy. Kara?
And thanks for listening to this AJP Heart and Circ podcast.